When your friends ask you to go out after you've already gotten home and taken your pants off, do you struggle to just say no? Do you find excuses and maybes and then ultimately get talked into it? Do you find that your family refuses to accept your boundaries or your no's, and so you're constantly in a power struggle of grief and passive aggressiveness? Or do you struggle to ask for what you want in bed, tolerating things that are just okay to downright bad? Well, if that sounds like you, I know that it can be me, people pleaser here, then you will want to check out my new online, on-demand, take-it-at-your-own-pace workshop, Take Up Space, a workshop on boundaries, self-worth, and strengthening your relationship with self. This workshop comes with 10 small modules and then workbooks that accompany those modules that help you to completely redefine the way that you understand boundaries to make them much more expansive, generous, flexible, and strong. It also helps you to examine the ways that you trust or distrust yourself and how you feel about being visible and taking the vulnerable risk of actually being seen. It's a really, really incredible course. Every single time I do a call or a workshop about boundaries, people have massive aha moments. And so I wanted to make this available to you no matter where you are in the world. If you're interested in redefining your relationship to boundary work, then you'll want to check this out. There's a link in the show notes and on the website. So check it out and join us around boundaries.
You're listening to
Sex Gets Real.
Sex Gets Real.
Sex Gets Real.
Sex Gets Real.
With Dawn Sarah.
With Dawn Sarah.
Thanks.
Bye.
Hey, you. Welcome to this week's episode. It's coming out a day late. I have been traveling on and off for the past 4 weeks, and yesterday I finally made it home. And when I collapsed in my bed, I literally couldn't get out of it. I just let myself sleep and nap pretty much for the entire day, which meant I didn't get a chance to post the episode. So I re-recorded the intro just to let you know, oops, sorry, it's a day late. And I'm really excited about this week's content. I'm going to be doing listener questions. There's some really good ones, and there have been some really awesome articles and resources that have come out lately that I wanted to talk about, including a question that someone had for me in person about expiration dates on condoms and whether or not being like a couple of weeks over the expiration date was okay. And this awesome article called In Praise of Tender Masculinity, The New Non-Toxic Way to Be a Man. I want to talk through that and just kind of talk about gender and masculinity and femininity and share a little bit about what was in the article. For Patreon supporters, first off, thank you, thank you, thank you, thank you, thank you, thank you, thank you so much for supporting the show, whether it's $1, $3, more. I appreciate you, and you literally help me to continue doing this show. So your bonus this week is all about the cult of pussy eaters. And the reason we're going there is because a friend was lamenting to me about how many times dudes that she's met with, like hooked up with, have felt like they were just the best thing in the world because they loved eating pussy, and she's so tired of it. And so it reminded me of this article by Charlotte Chain from 2016, all about the cult of pussy eaters and why they're terrible. So it probably will surprise you a little bit, but that's going to be our bonus content this week. So if you want to tune in, go to patreon.com/sexgetsreal, all one line. And if you support at $3 and above, you get access to the bonus content each and every week. So please do check it out. And let's go ahead and get started with this week's episode. I want to start with the piece about tender masculinity, which other people have written about it as nurturing masculinity in the past. There's all kinds of words that are trying to help people see a version of masculinity that isn't steeped in toxicity, that's not steeped in patriarchy and misogyny, which is pretty much what we have now. You've heard me talk about this so many times on the show, but toxic masculinity or hypermasculinity are deeply tied to violence, misogyny, patriarchy, oppression, and trying to position men as these kind of like steel, emotionless, hyper-muscular machines that can do no wrong and never have feelings about it. And it's not only incredibly, incredibly violent and murderous towards women and trans folks and other people in the population, but it's deeply harmful to men having to try and live up to this completely unrealistic ideal that also cuts men off from their tenderness, which is so strong, and their vulnerability, which is so necessary for connection, and just really creates this culture of disconnect and pain and violence, and we need something different. And, you know, I have feelings about masculinity and femininity. I think, well, I know they are completely and utterly created by humans and culture. They are not anything that is set in stone or scientific. They're cultural expectations that we have for people based on their gender or a perceived gender. And if you travel around the world, all kinds of different cultures have different versions of what masculinity and femininity look like, and also throughout the ages, which means it's something that we can change because it's just based on expectations and community and culture, not on anything that's immovable or unchangeable. I also think it's important to note that masculinity and femininity are not tied to gender, and that you can be a woman who moves through the world very much embracing masculinity, and you can be a man who very much moves through the world embracing femininity. And that doesn't have anything to do with your sexuality. I think that's very confusing for people, but that's because we've been raised in a society that teaches us about binaries and black and whites. And we as human beings are so much more complicated than that. One of my favorite people that confronts this all the time is Alok, who, if you aren't following Alok yet, especially on Instagram, I cannot recommend Alok enough for someone who is really challenging stories around gender and femininity and masculinity. And one of the things that Alok's been teaching me even is that body hair is not inherently masculine. The culture has been taught that because razor companies found a really clever way to increase sales in the early 1900s. Prior to that, women did not shave their legs and they did not shave their armpits. All through the 1500s, 1600s, 1700s, 1800s, when women were wearing these incredible corsets and gowns and dresses, they were wearing very thick stockings. And so you wouldn't be able to see it in portraits or pictures, but nobody was shaving their legs or their armpits. Certainly, that is a new invention that helped razor companies to increase their market because they had kind of tapped the men's market. So it was something that was manipulated through sales and images, and now we just take it as a given, which is to say that body hair is not inherently masculine and body hair is not anti-feminine. And because I was raised my entire life by family and friends who really subscribe to the thought that leg hair is kind of the antithesis of being feminine, I have taken that in. And of course, every image that I see anywhere reinforces that. And so I've been growing my leg hair out over the past couple of months, and it's been really confronting for me. It's been really uncomfortable. I feel deep shame when people see my legs, and I'm trying to give myself an opportunity to just be uncomfortable and to feel ashamed and to feel scared. You know, as someone in a fat body, I have also learned that one of the only ways to feel safe and seen and fat is to perform the most extreme version of femininity that I can by having long hair and pretty makeup and dresses and smooth, shiny legs. And, you know, the more that I can perform the femininity, the more people recognize my humanity. And so it's also been really scary to kind of confront that, to let some of that armor fall. I just want to offer that because so many of the stories that we have around masculinity and femininity have been fed to us and sold to us and are not kind of set in stone. We can make them whatever we want to make them. And I think that's a really exciting thing. So there's this incredible piece by Tara Loire called In Praise of Tender Masculinity, The New Non-Toxic Way to Be a Man. I would argue this is not new, but I think we're finding new language and being able to identify this version of masculinity in our current culture so it feels new. I know that this type of masculinity has existed throughout the ages in various cultures. So the newness, I think, just comes from we've been in a period in Western culture for a while where we didn't have many of these representations. But I don't think that it's particularly new. So I'm just going to share some tidbits from the article, and then I want you to write in to me with some thoughts about this and other characters that kind of embrace this version. So Tara goes on to say that media representations of masculinity tend to kind of fall into two roles. One is we have nice guys, and two is we have macho men. And both of those actually feed into toxic masculinity. So macho dudes are emotionally distant, but it's okay because they're buff and men don't need to have feelings. So that's things like action heroes. We might think of John McClane in Die Hard, or the tortured bad boy like Bender in The Breakfast Club, or Wuthering Heights' Heathcliff. And basically, it teaches us that their anger issues are quote unquote passionate, and their repressed emotions are something that are super romantic for women to fix. If I just love you enough through all of the ways that you're a total and utter asshole, then maybe I can quote unquote make you love me and you can find some tenderness, which is deeply abusive, but it's sold to us as being really romantic. Nice guys are kind of seen as the antidote, but usually in pop culture, that niceness is a total performance and it's in direct relation to their feelings about a crush. So the two examples that Tara names are Lori from Little Women, who does grow as a character because of the help of Joe, but as soon as she turns him down, he then takes all of that and weaponizes the character growth to try and get into her pants. We also see this with Tom from 500 Days of Summer, that was played by Joseph Gordon-Levitt. So in 500 Days of Summer, we have Tom, who's this like super charming underdog, but he's the antithesis of nice, because as soon as Summer turns down and doesn't meet his romantic expectations, despite her clearly communicating her boundaries, he resents her. And it turns into this like really passive aggressive kind of toxic story. So toxic masculinity can present itself in a number of ways, but it's everywhere. And it's pretty much the only version of masculinity that we have seen in pop culture in recent times. Tara offers, what is a tender man? How do we spot a tender man? And the questions that she asks are, is he invested in all of his relationships, not just romantic ones? That is really important. Does he express his emotions in a healthy way? Does he have words for his emotions? Is he able to articulate them and share them without using them like a weapon? Is self-awareness a concept he's comfortable with? Does he reflect and look at himself and can take bigger context and feedback in? Does he commit to personal growth? Are boundaries something he is aware of and respects? That's so important, because most nice guys in movies and television shows, they don't respect boundaries. They try to find ways to manipulate situations into the things that they want, which is completely and totally violent. But it's done in this sweet, charming way, so we don't notice. So a tender man, Tara is saying, is someone who respects boundaries, even if he's disappointed or frustrated or upset. And then, is he unafraid of male intimacy? For instance, can he express affection for male friends without making a gay joke? So it's not about perfection, but it's about a human condition that's always a work in progress or a journey. And I think that's super important because toxic masculinity is very like static, and you either achieve it or you don't. And note to self, nobody actually achieves the pinnacle. They are just constantly failing. So how does this show up in pop culture? Have we seen examples of this tender masculinity? And yes, we have. So I'm going to share five examples with you. And then I want to hear from you other examples that maybe you've seen in pop culture and why you think that's a version of tender masculinity. So the first one is Samwise Gamgee from Lord of the Rings, being deeply committed to this intimate, loving friendship that he has with Frodo, holding Frodo accountable, helping to share the burden, doing things that other people told him he shouldn't do in service to wanting to be there for his friend. It's really incredible. Another example of tender masculinity is the men in Moonlight, the movie. They're deeply imperfect, but they're showing up for each other in really profound ways. There's a lot of tenderness there, and touch and caring. Newt Scamander from Fantastic Beasts. If you follow Pop Culture Detective, then you will have definitely seen his video that's all about the fantastic masculinity of Newt Scamander from Fantastic Beasts. And I adore Newt. I think he's such a beautiful, beautiful character. I have the hugest crush on him. And one of the reasons is because we usually only see these types of characters as the sidekick, never as the hero. And Newt is the hero. He's the main character. He's quiet. He's vulnerable. He's confident. And what McIntosh from Pop Culture Detective argues is that Newt's truly special gift is not his magic or his ability to work with animals, it's his empathy. And I think that's so important. We have a main character who's confident and powerful, and yet his truly special gift is empathy. Then we also have Remus Lupin from Harry Potter, the werewolf. And the thing that Tara shares that I love so much is that his most compelling relationship is with Nymphadora Tonks, his wife. And what makes their relationship really refreshing is that it doesn't just fit into this cookie cutter soulmate narrative. Their history is fraught with trauma and grief, but rather than becoming codependent or distant, Lupin really takes the time to articulate and work through his complex feelings before marrying Tonks. So that's an incredible, incredible thing that I want so much more of for all of us. And then my favorite example is Magic Mike XXL. I did an entire O School stream all about this. It was one of my favorite streams that I had done in the year. And Magic Mike is really about celebrating male friendship and nurturing male friendship. These men who, to look at, you would think kind of fit the toxic masculinity ideal of, you know, taking off their clothes and trying to get chicks and, you know, being super muscular. And that's not at all what the movie is about. The movie is about consistently showing up for each other, celebrating each other's wins, supporting each other tenderly through the stuff that's really hard, listening, being empathetic, having fun, being yourselves without this performance aspect of needing to one up each other or like grunt your way through. And they're not afraid to touch each other. They're not afraid to just be really vulnerable. And I think that's, it's such a, I mean, Magic Mike could be a lot of things, but I think that it's truly a fantastic example of what it looks like when men support other men from a place of just genuine love and intimacy through friendship. So I want to hear from you. When you think about tender masculinity, or if you want to use a different word, like nurturing masculinity, or just being a good human, and you think about in pop culture, male characters that are invested in all of their relationships, not just romantic ones, that express emotions in a healthy way, that are self-aware and committed to personal growth, that respect boundaries, and that are unafraid of male intimacy without making it into a joke. Can you think of other characters and other storylines that fit into that? If so, I want to hear from you. Just go to sexgetsreal.com and use the contact form, because I want to build a big list of all these examples so that we can have this when someone is saying, I don't understand what's wrong with the masculinity that we have here. Why aren't the nice guys really nice? Why aren't the macho dudes someone to aspire to? I want us to be able to collectively say, let's look at these characters and why they're so powerful and beautiful and contribute to a better world that also leads to more pleasure and more joy and more fun and more play. So help me build the list. Write in and let me know. Okay, so condoms. Someone was recently talking about expiration dates on condoms on Facebook, and I ended up having a conversation with someone else, and they were like, is a couple of weeks over the expiration date okay or not? There was a whole bunch of sex educators on Facebook that were talking about it, and I passed this along to them, and I thought this might be something listeners want to hear too. So the bottom line is that the expiration date is less important than the handling conditions. So the guide to getting it on has a paragraph about this. And then someone who worked in a condom shop for over a decade kind of built on this in the conversations that were being had. But basically, if someone kept a condom in their back pocket of their jeans for several months, hoping to get lucky, or in their wallet, or if it was kept in a car for weeks on end when it was parked in like a hot summer sun, that's going to be far more problematic to the integrity of the condom than whether or not it's a month or two old. So what we're really worried about with condoms is breakage and leaks and, you know, a wearing down that can lead to breakage. So the person from the condom shop said that expiration dates are truly dependent on handling. If you've had a box of condoms in a really cool place, like a back closet for a couple of years, and they are a month expired, then they're probably okay. They haven't been in conditions that would cause any kind of drying out or deterioration or friction, which are all things you should be worried about. Whereas carrying a condom in a wallet or in a back pocket or in a backpack where temperatures are constantly changing and it's getting bumped up against, maybe it's been in a bowl in a bright sunlight for several months on the counter of like a clinic or something, then that would be a condom that you probably wouldn't want to use. So this is primarily around latex and lambskin condoms. But I just thought that it was a really interesting conversation that was being had, because I know that I've had condoms that have been past their expiration date by only like a week or two, and I haven't been sure whether or not I wanted to use them. I tend to be really careful with my condoms. They get stored in a container so that they don't get jostled around. They stay in a cool place that's out of the sun. So those would probably be okay to use. But again, just think about that. Think about the storage conditions. Think about how they've been handled. And if you're not sure or you have doubts, don't use it. Because it's always better to be safe than to be sorry. And if that's the only condom you have on hand and you're really, really feeling hot and heavy and horny, guess what? There's a thousand other things that you can do that are super sexy and super pleasurable and orgasmic that don't have to involve a dick. For those of you who have condoms, pay attention to the ways that you store them and the ways that they're treated, because frankly, even if you're inside the expiration date, but the handling conditions have been really rough, it's been in high temperatures and low temperatures and jostled around, even if that condom is only a couple of months old and well before the expiration date, you probably don't want to use it. So let's be better about the ways that we store our condoms and go take a look at all of the condoms that you have and make some decisions about whether or not you need some new ones. Okay, so let's dive into listener questions. Artemis wrote in and it says, Dom, but I love getting fucked. Hi, Don. I love the show and I have found it extremely insightful. I'm a trans woman dominant, and I absolutely adore everything about being a dom, except that I feel like there's a hang up between doming and being able to be penetrated. I've had my sub use toys on me once or twice, but each time she's felt pretty awkward about it as it didn't feel submissive to her. I was wondering if you have any tips on how I can get what I crave without turning the DS dynamic on its head. Best, Artemis. Yay, Artemis. Oh my God, I love this question so much. I had the conversation about this very thing just a couple of months ago with Sinclair Sexsmith. So my first recommendation is not for you, but it's for your sub. If your sub has a chance to go through Sinclair Sexsmith's online submissives playground, it's a multi-week experience to help submissives get really clear on what kind of submissive they are and all of the different ways to be submissive. And Sinclair is so inclusive of so many different types of genders and types of DS relationships. I can't recommend that enough. I also think it might be interesting, if you don't already have it, to get the new Bottoming book by Dossie Easton and Janet Hardy. You know, some people love the book, some people don't, but I think that there are some really useful questions in it that could help you and your sub to have new conversations. So one of the things I just kind of want to ask about submission and your sub is that something about the stories we tell culturally about submission and what it means are pretty limiting. So we often think of submission as kind of this like singular experience, and it is so much more than that. And people who have been in kink for a really long time know that, and I know you know that, Artemis, but just for other listeners, you know, the submissives aren't just doormats. They aren't people who will just do anything that you say. They won't take whatever you give them. Certainly there are some people who want to experience submission that way, but that's not what kind of the overall experience of submission is. There's so many different ways that people live as submissives and experience their submissiveness. And so my first question, Artemis, for you is, does your sub see submission as this identity that is their primary identity? Is it how they want to move through their entire lives being submissive or being a slave and trying to manifest that in both the bedroom and outside? Or is it a role that they take on for certain parts of their life? You know, are they submissive in the bedroom and in kink scenes sometimes, or maybe even frequently, but outside of the bedroom is... are they living in a much more dominant way or a much more switchy way? I think that's an important question to just have with your submission or your submissive. And one of the things that Dossie and Janet talk about is that bottoming or being submissive is for them deeply powerful. And many submissives and just the culture at large see submission as this passive, disempowered, self-destructive, needy, whining wimp. And instead, they talk about the power of being a bottom. And asking questions about what power means and what type of submissive you really want to be. And so what I'm hearing is your submissive doesn't feel submissive when they give. And Sinclair has so many incredible things to say about that, how you can absolutely be topping while you're being penetrated. You can absolutely be submissive or body bottoming when you're swinging the flogger or wearing the strap on, because it's all about the mindset and the setup and what leads you into the scene and kind of what the goal is of the scene and then what happens after the scene. I think it's also really important to just kind of like think through the reasons or the hopes and fantasies of what your submissive is looking for in their role. Are they looking to be kind of this blank slate that is totally receptive, obedient, and doesn't worry whether or not they're doing something right because they're going to be told exactly what to do? Or is your submissive someone who's more into pleasing, who really wants to serve? Are they a service bottom? They want to initiate having that cup of tea ready before the top or the dom is even really in knowing that they want tea and trying to like anticipate needs and to just be of service. I think it's important for the two of you to kind of talk about what does submission mean to them. And then the other thing that I just want to kind of throw out there is that giving service for many submissives is something that they love to do, but not all. If your submissive is really into servicing, that's part of the power exchange. They want to give some kind of valuable effort to the dominant. So whether that's a sexual service or a personal service like massages and pedicures or house service like cleaning and cooking or even financial service, to be in service could be something that the two of you use as a way to make giving you as the dom pleasure from a place of deep service, like the ultimate submission. And so I think that thinking about the setup, thinking about the needs that your submissive has and what brings them joy as a submissive, and then finding ways to create scenes that support that version of submission. It might take a little bit more work, but absolutely it's doable. You know, Sinclair talked about it at length about how you can be the person that's receiving the strap on or receiving the fist or receiving the flogger and be the person who is controlling that scene, who is doming and topping. And so they're not mutually exclusive. And I love that you want this. And I think part of what's probably going to have to happen is just because of all the stories that we have about what it means to be a submissive, which is often to be the receptacle, to be the receiver. And some people are really drawn to submission because they want to be the receptacle and the receiver. They want to be the one that is passive, or they want to be the one that is used. To flip that might be really confronting. And so how can you reframe it of doing the thing to their dom is deeply in service, is deeply hot. It is all about being used. You're nothing but a toy that just brings me pleasure. How can you kind of expand that to include them? And how can the two of you collaborate on something that would be utterly hot for the both of you? Because I think that's something else that's really important is, as a dom, you don't have to just kind of exist in a vacuum where you come up with all of the ideas and never get your submissive's input. Why can't the two of you, as part of an order or as part of a scene, collaborate on ways to make that really, really hot? And it might take some time. It might take some practice. There might be some big stories that your sub has to rewrite and let go of. It might not happen after one or two conversations or one or two books. So decide if you want to invest in that and see where you can go with it. But they are not mutually exclusive. To be a dom and to receive absolutely makes sense. And to be a submissive who is doing the thing to someone else who is penetrating or throwing, of course that can be incredibly submissive act. To do the thing that someone else ordered you, to give up control and power and to just act, to anticipate somebody's needs and pleasure and wants, and to be able to deliver that in this beautifully subservient way. I mean, there's so much opportunity that's rich there. So ask some questions, collaborate, make it as fun as you can. And hopefully, Artemis, you can get wonderfully, beautifully fucked by your submissive. So good luck, report back, and enjoy, because you deserve this. So I got another email that says, "Hi Dawn, thank you for all of your info and advice. I keep seeing on porn, the person who gets anal immediately give head after. Isn't that unsafe? Is there ever a time that's okay? Thank you, Kat." Thank you for asking this question, Kat, because you know I have thoughts and opinions, like always. So the first thing I want to offer is that depending on the porn you're watching, because, you know, all porn is different. It's not this like singular entity. But if you're watching more mainstream porn versus like a really awesome feminist porn, the likelihood that a lot of those scenes have been edited is high. So one of the things that a really good editor is able to do is, no matter what kind of film you're watching, whether it's a television show or a commercial or a movie or porn, a really great editor is going to be able to hide the edits. They are invisible to the viewer, unless you're a professional in the field that knows what to look for. And so that is to say that oftentimes we will watch something that seems completely seamless, but there are edits inside of it that are just masterfully done so that we don't notice that they've been edited. One part of the scene might be from the morning and another part of the scene might be from the afternoon on take 20, but the way that they're put together, especially if you've got some skilled lighting and skilled actors, is going to look as if it was all happening at the exact same time. Porn is about fantasy, not instruction. Some porn is about instruction, and it usually tells you that it is. Tristan Taramino has some wonderful porn out there, and it is very much all about instruction and kind of demonstrating different techniques and showing different ways to have sex while having sex. But for the most part, porn in and of itself is about fantasy. And so it's not a way to learn how to do the things. It's a way to perform doing the things so that we can enjoy it. Which is to say, a lot of the things that we see in porn are not the way that things are going to happen in our lives with our partners. They might, but they also might not. So we can't use porn as a way to teach us whether or not something is safe or whether or not it's something we should be doing with partners. We need to get educated, which is why you wrote in and asked, which I love, and also communicate with our partners. So let's talk a little bit about butts. Even if you give yourself multiple enemas and you really flush out your colon and you really scrub your asshole and you just super prep yourself for butt play, it doesn't mean that there's not still E. coli and other bacteria in that area that you need to be careful about. Just because you don't see any brown or smell anything bad doesn't mean that the bacteria, specifically E. coli, isn't still there, which is why we always want to be as safe as possible or as feels good for us. All of us have different levels of risk we're willing to take on. So that's why I always recommend using gloves and using condoms, even if you're in an exchange with someone where you don't use barriers for other types of sexual activity. I still recommend condoms for anal just because that helps to protect you from all kinds of tears and bacteria. And, you know, it's a sensitive area. That said, some people don't mind taking on the risk. Some people love eating out ass. Some people love doing all kinds of things, and they don't mind taking on the risk that they might get sick or catch something from it, because there's no way to guarantee the absence of bacteria. So the one thing that I will say about porn is usually right before a scene, there's been enemas done, there's been no food, their bowels tend to be super clean. That's one of the reasons why you almost never see messy anal in porn. One, it's because they've done all kinds of enemas, and two, because if there is a mess, they're just going to edit it out and retake the scene, and then you, voila, don't see a mess because they've cleaned it off for a couple of seconds before they start filming again. So, you know, it's the magic of movies in Hollywood. I also just want to note that sometimes people will enema themselves to the point where they start seeing mucosa coming from the intestines. And that is not a good thing. That means that you've really irritated your insides, and that actually makes you more prone to infection. So we don't want to be doing that, even if we are doing enemas. Any kind of anal play, a mess is inevitable. It just is. And you have to find ways to just be okay with that. We have been taught that like poop is just the worst thing in the whole wide world. Well, you know, sure, it carries bacteria and sometimes it's really stinky and it's kind of gross and we don't really want it on our pillow. But that's not to say you can't just throw a pillow down or a towel down and take a shower. But do you want to take a dick that's been in your ass and put it right in your mouth? Well, that's for you to decide. Would I do that? No, that's just not a thing for me. I would take the condom off and then give them a blowjob, or I would have a female condom in my ass so that there wasn't any kind of transfer, and then suck them off. Sure. But other people, they don't have a problem with it. For them, that's a risk that they're willing to take. They don't mind. They just want to go for it. They want to eat the ass or suck the dick or whatever it is. So for you, you just have to decide what is the level of risk and exposure that you're willing to take on, and then go from there. Because what we see in porn, again, is edited. It is scripted. It has been cut and retaken, and there's often multiple takes, and there's starts and stops. There's a reapplying of lube that you don't see. There is a wiping down of things that they consider, you know, unsightly or not sexy before it resumes. that's just how it goes when you're creating a product that people consume and pay for. So there's so many things that might be happening in the scenes that you're watching that get you from A to B in those scenes where it goes from anal to immediately giving head. It also might be that those performers have negotiated, this is a risk I'm willing to take on. Or also depending on the studio, the performers are forced to do that even if they don't want to. And we just have to remember that the way we live this out in our lives might be totally different. So I love that you asked the question, Kat, because it's an opportunity for all of us to learn and to level up and to just really think, here's the risks. I might get E. coli. I might get gastrointestinal bacteria that make me feel really sick. I might not. And this is so hot, I'm willing to take that on, or I'm really not willing to take that on. And here's all the ways around that. You know, I can rip the condom off and give you head 2 seconds after you've been in my ass, or I can wear an internal condom and you can fuck me to your heart's content and you're never going to get any shit on your dick. And then I can suck you off. All kinds of fun alternatives for doing that if you're interested in it. But to everybody listening, just remember what you see in porn isn't always what exactly happened. And that's really important. So thank you so much for listening, Kat, and for writing in. I loved that question. So I got another question that says, "Hi, Dawn. Me and my other half have been together for 6 years now. Our sex life is amazing, and I wouldn't trade it for the world. But I'm having this, I wouldn't say weird, but I have this weird desire to peg my man. It's been something that's been on my mind, and when I brought it up to him, he was not having it. So what do I do? Should I just ignore it until this desire goes away? Should I go to some sort of event and just try it out? I know that's not a good idea, but it's something I've been thinking. It doesn't help that that's what I look up when I'm watching porn, and it's just driving me bananas. Thanks, and I can't wait to hear what you have to say." Thank you so much for this question. The person that I most want to refer you to is Kavanaugh Quick. So if you didn't hear Kavanaugh Quick on the show, go find that episode. Kavanaugh is pure magic. Kavanaugh and I also talked about this at the Explore More Summit this year. So if you want to hear amazing conversation between the two of us, check out exploremoresummit.com. Kavanaugh is one of the speakers. You can get all the talks for a really, 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 really ridiculously reasonable price. It's like $1.20 per talk or something. And it's wonderful. But anyway, one of the things that Kavanaugh and I have talked about both on the show, on Explore More Summit, and that Kavanaugh has explored in their O School streams a whole bunch, is that we can sit in a desire and a craving and an urge. And while it might be uncomfortable, it's not going to kill us. So this is a complicated thing that lots of people have feelings about. Some people feel like it's a desire. I should chase it to my heart's content and no one should ever limit me from it. And other people have different kinds of feelings. I, of course, take a middle road and know that all of us are different. All of us have different desires for our life. All of us have different capacities for tolerating certain feelings. So you're just going to have to trust yourself, listener, on what it is you feel like leads to the most pleasurable, wonderful outcome for you. If being in this relationship of 6 years with the amazing sex is really important to you and you don't want to do anything that potentially damages that relationship, then I am here to tell you that no matter how much you might want to peg him, you aren't going to die. You're not going to get sick. You are nothing bad is going to happen to you to just have this craving that you're like, oh God, I really want this thing, but I can't have it. You know, it's like, I don't know, cake. You might really, really want cake, but you can't get to the grocery store today and you're heading on a trip or you're in the middle of a flight and or you're gluten intolerant and you haven't found a cake that you really like and you just remember how much you loved cake as a kid and you just can't have cake right now. That's okay. Nobody's going to die. We might be a little uncomfortable. We might think about it a lot. The important thing is to not try and deny it. So that's where I kind of want to go with this. When we feel ashamed of our desires and we try to deny that we have them, we try to hide, we try to lie, we try to sneak, then it can become very compulsive. It can be this thing that all we want to do is not think about the thing, but because we're trying to force ourselves not to think about the thing because we feel ashamed about it, then all we do is think about the thing. That's not a healthy dynamic. What is healthy, or healthier, since health is totally arbitrary, but what is more aligned and more honest is to say, yeah, I am super into this pegging thing. I think it could be really hot. I think about it a lot. I masturbate to it. And if you're not ready to do that, that's super okay. If you ever change your mind or you want to like talk about it some more, let me know. I'm going to just keep masturbating to it. And I'm going to have super hot fantasies about it. And it's a thing that I really enjoy and I allow myself to enjoy. And I'm choosing not to pursue it at this time because I want to prioritize this relationship that's super important to me. That is absolutely something you can choose for yourself. If the suffering that you're experiencing from not experiencing pegging is greater than your desire to maintain this relationship, then you might make a choice to end the relationship or to do something that might damage the relationship, to go seek this out. And that is totally up to you and how you want to live your life. But there are all kinds of things that we might really, really want for ourselves. We might be really hungry for it. We might super be craving it, whether it's watching a certain movie that nobody in our lives want to watch with us, or having a certain kind of food that we just can't have because of a new food allergy, or a fantasy that we just can't let go of because we're so excited and turned on by it. Nothing bad is going to happen to you other than you might just think about it a lot and feel kind of uncomfortable and disappointed. And it's okay to feel those things. It's okay to feel disappointed that he doesn't want to try pegging right now. He might change his mind down the road. We have to let that be an opportunity. I also wonder, are there ways to incorporate versions of pegging or alternatives to pegging? Karen BK Chan loves to ask, what is it about pegging that you find hot? What's underneath that desire? Is it a swapping of the gender roles, like traditional gender roles? Is it being inside of someone else? Is it because you love asses? Is it because it's something you've never done before and you like doing new things? Investigate what's underneath that desire, because there is something underneath that's driving it. And once you kind of get to that yummy little kernel of like, oh, it's about power. Oh, it's about seeing him be submissive. It's about the taboo, whatever it is. Now, once we get to that place, there's so many other ways to play with taboo. There's so many other ways to play with submission. There's so many other ways to play with all kinds of different things. So that might open you up to new types of fantasy, to new types of porn, to new kinds of alternatives to discuss with your partner, and even things to do to yourself, you know, in service to that delicious desire. So get curious about it to create as much spaciousness as you can, and just decide what it is that's most important to you right now. Because we all have so much shame and tension around sex, it can feel like, oh my God, I've just discovered this fantasy. And if I don't do it, I'm going to die. That's not true. So how can you use this as a place of play rather than as a place of disconnection and shame and disappointment? Yes, you're allowed to feel disappointed and frustrated and, oh God, I really want to try the thing. But if you were to say, well, what is this thing really about? And how can I celebrate this? And what are other ways I can work this into my life and tend to the relationship and get really creative in that space? You might find some really, really yummy things. So I don't know how important the relationship is to you and how important your pegging fantasy is to you, but you need to do a little bit of investigating in that space and then see how creative you can get with whatever the answer is. And then hopefully pleasure's on the other side. But I also just want to name, just because we really want something doesn't mean we're going to get it. And that's just how life is sometimes. And this isn't necessarily specifically to you, listener. Just kind of in general, you know, lots of people kind of have this feeling of like entitlement. dudes, you know, You know, this feeling of entitlement of because I want a thing, someone must give it to me, or the whole world is broken. The whole world is against me. It's not fair. That's not how any of this works. You know, it's just not. Just because you want a thing, that's the beginning and end. You want a thing. Maybe it gets met. Maybe it doesn't. There's a thousand other things you want that are getting met. So let's create a little more spaciousness around the desire and the sex piece. Because then we're so much more likely to find the abundant options that can help us feel adjacent to the thing or very similar to the thing. I mean, it's just such a beautiful, beautiful space for creativity. So check out the Kavanaugh Quick episode of Sex Gets Real, and also head to exploremoresummit.com if you want to get this year's talks. Kavanaugh's is awesome. Karen BK Chan spoke. Awesome, always. And also check out Karen BK Chan's interview on Sex Gets Real, because we talk a little bit about this desire piece too. Thank you so much for listening. I hope so much for you that you're able to just roll around in this pegging fantasy, that you're able to delight in it and find it delicious and enjoy it in all the ways that feel good for you. And that you can find what's underneath that fantasy and then maybe get super creative with your partner with whom you have amazing sex to maybe find another way to kind of meet that delicious, yummy craving and need. And do whatever you can to just allow it to be true. There's no shame in it. There's nothing wrong with wanting to do it. It is hot to peg someone. So you never know what's going to happen a few months or a few years down the road. If you can just really hold your arms open wide, and I love so many different yummy sexual things with you, and this is one thing I'd really like to try. Who knows what might happen? And I love the possibilities. So thank you so much for listening. Okay. We are going to do one more question that's super short, and then I'm going to pop over and record the bonus that's all about the cult of pussy eating for Patreon supporters. So don't forget, you can go to patreon.com/sexgetsreal, support the show at $3 and above, and get access to every single week's bonus content. So here's the final question. It is from Wanderer. That's it. Wow, Don. It's an O, not an A. Okay. Subject line, sex. Wow, there we go. Okay. So the message is very short. I'm in love and having sex with a 6'4", 250-pound lineman. When we have sex, I normally ride him and or we do doggy style. Are there any other positions we can do to keep it fun and interesting? Yes, there's so many. Oh my God. Okay. So, my recommendation to anybody who is in a fat body or having sex with someone in a fat body is to get two books. The first is Curvy Girl Sex by Elle Chase, and the other one is Big, Big Love by Hannah Blank. Both of those books talk all about all kinds of different stuff that comes with sex and fat bodies. And both come with drawings of different ways that you can position your bodies. Elle Chase's book, Curvy Girl Sex, has 101 positions in it, including using all kinds of different sex furniture and pillows and angles, all these yummy ways that you might be able to position your bodies to have so much incredible, interesting experiences together. I would invest in a ramp or a wedge. Liberator makes them. They're fairly expensive. There's all kinds of other companies that make versions of those for less money now. So look for alternatives. Use pillows liberally. Look for ways to use beds and couches and chairs and hammocks and yoga balls and yoga bolsters and whatever you have around your house to get really creative. And just keep in mind too, anytime you're trying new positions, it might be awkward, it might totally not work, and being able to go in and just have a great sense of humor about that is important. Lots of people in bigger bodies experience deep shame when things don't work with their body because the world tells you your body is wrong already. So just keep that in mind too, you know, move into it really gently and with a lot of generosity, but check out both of those books, Curvy Girl Sex and Big, Big Love. Lots of ideas in those books because, you know, one of the things that I think is important to remember is that fat bodies come in so many different shapes and sizes. There's such beautiful variety in bigger bodies. You know, a person that's 250 pounds or 350 pounds, you can line up 100 people who are that weight, and they're all going to have different ways that they hold their weight, which is actually kind of a really beautiful thing, the lack of kind of this sameness in the bodies. It also means that when you're looking for instruction, you know, there might be 101 positions and maybe only a small handful work for that particular body. But that's still exciting because there's a handful of things to try. And then maybe variations of all the other ones. So enjoy the love and the sex with your linemen and check out those books and see if they can give you some inspiration for different ways to position yourself and to play with the wonderful ways that your bodies might fit together. So good luck, Wanderer. Have fun. Thank you so much for writing in and for listening. And to all of you who tuned in, don't forget to grab my Boundaries Workshop, Take Up Space. There is a link in the show notes. It is such a great starting point for exploring a very different way of approaching boundaries. And then Patreon supporters, pop over to Patreon because we are about to have a conversation about pussy eaters. Thank you so much for tuning in. I will talk to you next week. Bye.